Something doesn't feel right. The engine sounds fine. Your fuel gauges are a little low, but they've always read a little low. The weather ahead is building, but it's not a wall yet. You've got another 40 minutes to your destination. You've made this trip before, so you press on. That moment, that specific moment where something is off and you choose to keep going anyway, that is what I want to dig into today. I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and we're talking about the precautionary landing. Not an emergency, not a mayday call, the landing you choose to make, on your own initiative, because something in the situation deserves more respect than you're giving it from the cockpit at altitude. This is one of the most important judgment calls in all of general aviation, and it's also one of the least practiced. Before we get into the scenarios, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. A precautionary landing is exactly what it sounds like. You land as a precaution. You're not on fire. You're not declaring anything. You've decided that continuing flight carries more risk than landing, and you've picked a spot, an airport, a field, a road, if it comes to that, and you're putting the airplane down. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, doesn't define it exactly the way they define an emergency, but the Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, assess your ability to manage risk and make sound decisions under uncertainty. A precautionary landing is the textbook application of that skill. The difference between a precautionary landing and an emergency landing is almost entirely about when you decide to act. Emergency landings often happen when you've run out of options. Precautionary landings happen when you still have them. That window matters. It matters a lot. So why don't pilots make precautionary landings more often? Because doing nothing feels like the right call when nothing has officially gone wrong yet. There's a name for this in human factors research. It gets called continuation bias. Once you're in the air and headed somewhere, the brain wants to complete the mission. Turning around or landing short of the destination feels like admitting defeat. It triggers a kind of cognitive resistance that is surprisingly powerful, even in experienced pilots. And layered on top of that is embarrassment. You land at a strange airport. You have to call someone. You have to explain yourself. Maybe there's nothing actually wrong, and you spent time and money sorting out what turned out to be a false alarm. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The pilots who make precautionary landings and discover everything was fine, they made the right call. The airplane told them something. They listened. The fact that it turned out to be nothing doesn't mean they were wrong to land. The pilots who pressed on and found out something was seriously wrong. Some of them are in accident reports. Some of them landed fine by sheer luck. Very few of them would tell you they were proud of the decision. Let me take you through the four big categories where a precautionary landing deserves serious consideration. First, fuel. Fuel mismanagement is the most preventable cause of engine stoppage in general aviation. You know this. You've read it. And yet it keeps happening. Here's the scenario. You're on a cross country. You planned for plenty of reserve, but you picked up an unexpected headwind, stronger than forecast. Your ground speed is lower than planned. You're not far behind schedule, not quite there yet, but you're burning more fuel to cover less distance than you expected. Your gauges say you have fuel. Maybe your gauges have always read a little optimistic. At what point do you stop and get fuel? The 45 minutes visual flight rules, or VFR, reserve exists for a reason, but it isn't a target, it's a floor. The right answer isn't to plan to land with exactly 45 minutes of fuel. The right answer is to set a personal threshold and stick to it. Many experienced pilots use an hour. Some use 90 minutes when flying over unfamiliar terrain or areas with limited alternates. When the fuel picture starts looking uncertain, the precautionary stop is cheap. It costs you time and the price of fuel. The alternative can cost significantly more. Second, whether you planned a VFR flight. You got a full weather briefing. But somewhere along the route, the picture changed. Ceilings are lower than forecast. The visibility ahead looks hazy. There's a line of cumulus building faster than the models expected. You're still visual, you're still legal, but the margin is shrinking. This is one of the harder calls because still legal and good judgment are not the same thing. VFR minimums exist as the absolute floor, not as operational targets. Maneuvering in reduced visibility at low altitude while navigating and communicating is a high workload environment, and it degrades fast. The scenario to watch for is gradual encroachment. Each mile, each minute, the conditions tighten just a little. You adapt, you descend a little. You slow down, you keep going because you haven't hit a hard wall yet. That is the scenario that kills people. Not one dramatic decision, the series of small adaptations that never individually trigger the alarm, but collectively put you into a situation you can no longer fly out of. If you catch yourself adapting, that is your cue. Find an airport. Land. Get a cup of coffee and watch the weather. An hour on the ground can change the picture completely. Third, mechanical. Something sounds different, or feels different. Or one of your instruments is behaving in a way you haven't seen before. Not obviously wrong, just not right. Mechanical anomalies are tricky because there's always a story you can tell yourself. Oil pressure is fluctuating, but maybe it's always done that a little. There's a vibration, but maybe it's just turbulence. The engine sounds rough for a second, then smooth again. Here's a framework. If you've noticed something once, you're watching for it. If you've noticed it twice, you're starting to rationalize. If you've noticed it three times, land. That's not a regulatory standard. That's pattern recognition. Something is asking for your attention. Pay attention to it while you still have altitude and options. A forced landing into a field from 200 feet is a very different emergency than a precautionary diversion to an airport you chose calmly at 3,000 feet with a working engine and time to spare. Both flights started with the same early warning. Only one pilot acted on it. Fourth, physiological. This one gets underestimated because it feels personal, embarrassing, even you're not feeling well. Maybe you're tired in a way that seems like more than normal fatigue. Maybe you're feeling off and you're not sure why. Maybe you took an over-the-counter medication that seemed fine on the ground and feels different at altitude. The physiological category covers a wide range. Hypoxia, carbon monoxide exposure, dehydration, medication effects, illness, stress. The tricky part is that some of these impair your ability to recognize that you are impaired. Here's a simple test. Would you feel comfortable explaining your current physical state to a doctor and asking whether you should be flying? If the answer is any version of probably or I think so, that's not a yes. Land, rest, eat something, call someone, figure out what's happening before you continue. Okay, you've made the decision, you're going to land short of the destination. How do you actually execute this? Step 1. Aviate. The airplane still needs to be flown. This sounds obvious, but it is worth saying, don't get so focused on where you're going to land and what that means for your schedule that you stop flying the airplane. Fly first, figure out the rest second. Step 2. Navigate. Where are you? What airports are within reach? Your nearest airport is always available on your moving map or your sectional chart. Know it before you need it. This is why situational awareness isn't just a check ride buzzword. It is the habit that makes the precautionary landing a calm choice rather than a scramble. Step 3. Communicate. Tell someone if you're already in contact with air traffic control or ATC. You don't have to declare an emergency. You can simply say you'd like to divert and briefly explain why. ATC will help you. If you're not in contact with ATC, try to reach the nearest facility or broadcast your intentions on the common traffic advisory frequency of the airport you're diverting to. And if the situation is serious enough that you're considering declaring an emergency, declare. There is no penalty for declaring an emergency that turns out to be less serious than you thought. The FAA cares far more about pilots who exercise sound judgment than it does about cleaning up a paperwork formality. Hesitating to declare when the situation calls for it is not prudence. It's pride, and pride does not help ATC help you. Step 4. Pick your airport. If you have options, pick the one that best fits your situation. Fuel concern? Closest airport with fuel? Weather? Closest airport with clear conditions? Mechanical anomaly? Closest airport, period. Get down. Step 5. Land normally. This is a precautionary landing, not a crash landing. You have the runway in sight. You have a stable approach. Fly your speeds, land like you planned it. Because you did. When you're preparing for your private pilot check ride, the examiner isn't just looking at whether you can execute maneuvers to a standard. They're looking at whether you make good decisions. The ACS specifically evaluates risk management and the ability to make sound decisions under uncertainty. A scenario where the examiner introduces some developing problem and asks what you'd do is one of the cleaner ways to see how you actually think under pressure. The right answer is never press on and hope. The right answer is always some version of assess the situation, consider my options, and make a conservative choice. Sometimes that conservative choice is to continue, but it should be a deliberate decision, not a default. The examiner is looking for a process that you don't freeze, that you don't deny, that you don't rationalize your way into a bad situation. Show them you have a framework, and you'll be fine. If you're still in training, practice this in the airplane. Ask your instructor to give you a scenario mid-flight: fuel running lower than expected, weather building to the north, something sounding wrong with the engine. Work through the decision, actually divert, actually land somewhere you didn't plan to land. Get comfortable with the idea that changing the plan is not failure. Changing the plan is exactly what good pilots do. Here's one practical thing you can do before your next cross country. Write down your personal minimums, not the regulatory minimums, yours. At what fuel level will you divert for fuel? No exceptions. At what ceiling will you turn around or land, no matter what the destination weather is, at what visibility? What will you do if you notice a mechanical anomaly once? Twice? What is your physical test for whether you're fit to fly that day? Write it down. Put it in your kneeboard or your flight bag. The reason you write it down isn't just to remember it. The reason is that when you're in the air and the brain starts rationalizing, the written commitment is harder to argue with than a decision you made on the ground last week and only half remember. That piece of paper is you at your most rational, talking directly to yourself in the cockpit when the situation is doing its best to cloud your thinking. Information for today's segment comes from the FAA's Risk Management Handbook and the Aeronautical Information Manual. Both are worth reading and worth revisiting after you've got some flight time behind you. More at radiohangar.com. Safe flying out there. I'll see you next time.